Welcome to Charlie Foxtrot, a Stargate Universe podcast. I'm Boom.
I'm Cetra.
There's one hell of a Charlie Foxtrot this episode with Lost, isn't it?
Oh, no shit. If nothing at all happened last episode, they were like, now, 12 Stargate jumps through a bunch of problems, and also all the feels. Go.
Yeah. Oh, God, this episode is so tense. It's so tense. Like, even the previouslys are just insane. And I was thinking about why I liked Stargate in comparison to, like, say, a Stargate Atlantis previously. And I was like, it's because it's not like, oh, and the Earth might get sucked dry by the Wraith, or, oh, the goal, oh, they're going to make everybody into slaves again. It's very personal, the stakes. Like, it's really just about three or four people. It's not world-ending, and for some reason I find that so much more dramatic.
Well, and specifically within the world of Destiny, like, it would be world-ending for some people.
It would be, yeah, for
right?
sure.
I mean, losing Chloe and Eli would be a huge blow to morale.
Right.
Losing...
So, ironically, Eli is shitty at morale this episode, but yes.
Yeah, but as an impact on morale, he's generally positive.
Losing Matt would be awful.
Yeah, losing Matt or Greer would just undermine Young's authority massively.
Right.
At a time when he would be unpopular for letting Eli and Chloe go to a planet. So
it's true. It's true.
Definitely caused some issues in the command system.
I was thinking, though, I think you're right, but on another note, you know how they say kill three people, it's a tragedy, kill 3,000, who cares?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because I'm so connected to these characters, whereas I'm like, eh, whatever, Earth.
And that's, I think we're seeing something in this Stargate that we don't see as much in a lot of other Stargate shows, which is that because we know every person on this ship, give or take.
It's vital.
Everyone is vital.
Except Jesus Kane.
Well, even Jesus Kane isn't dead.
No.
He just chose to stay somewhere. Like, yeah. Something blows up, a couple of medical techs are dead, like, they're upset about that.
Right.
But it's not like, oh, I knew that person, I knew their wife that they left behind.
Right.
You know.
And you're not ever worried that Jay Shep is gonna die. You're not, oh, I guess they do get rid of Tori Higgins' character. But... And I guess they do kill Carson, but that took, like, 4 seasons.
Yeah, I mean, here we are in the middle of season 1, and we're already, like...
Even though we haven't really lost anyone, like, the stakes just feel like we could anytime now. So anyways, it starts with Riley taking on Eli's duty of keynoing, and Rush is pissed as shit about it. And Brody kind of just looks at the kino and says, I'm done, and he leaves. And I kind of want to know what that's about.
Riley, over everybody else, seems to kind of be accepting this, like, we lost Eli. Like, he was doing XYZ important stuff, I'm going to take over. In this very, like, military way.
Right.
Which is weird that none of the rest of anybody is on top of that.
I don't think anyone really thinks the kino duty is that important.
Well, that just means nobody's keeping Riley busy.
Right. Well, I mean, he probably just got off a leave last episode.
Oh, that's true.
Because he was in the hospital. Well, in the infirmary for quite a while. Probably since Earth, actually, when he got hurt.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well.
So he probably just doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Good for him to have a project.
Right. Yeah, good for him. But then Brody is like, I'm done, and he just leaves. And I don't know if he's like saying, hey, Rush, I finished my calculations, or he's just like, I don't want to deal with you doing the kino stuff, Riley, but he doesn't seem happy.
Or he just knows that Rush hates it, and so he's like, I'm just going to express the emotion we are all feeling and tell you to fuck off.
I mean, usually he lets Rush do that expressing, but I mean, in this episode, it's really undeniable that Brody... gets Rush without really having to talk to Rush. Like, when they have conversations, it's about things that they've never actually discussed. It's just about things they have figured out independently with one another.
Yeah, and what I think absolutely is that more than anybody else, seeing Rush put himself in the chair was extremely powerful to Brody.
I think so.
Right? Like, seeing this brilliant man who values his own intelligence more than just about anything else put that on the line. And maybe Brody has some, you know, memories he'd rather forget, too, and kind of sees that in Rush.
Ooh, I like that. You know, I had a realization about him, by the way, which is a little bit tangential, so stick with me. He's not gone on a planet yet all, has he?
Ooh.
I think that's probably why he and Rush are so connected, is because Brody, except for the one time when they try to go back home and the ship is being destroyed and he's pissed at Rush for lying about the bridge, that is the only time he thinks to go through the Stargate.
Yeah.
And technically the only... Oh, no, wait. He died on time. Never mind. He was on time. Dang it. Ruined. But this one wasn't on time. This one didn't go through the gate on time. This Brody is not that one.
Yes. Time is so confusing.
Such a good episode, though. And so is this one. I don't know. I really like Rush here because he's not... He's different now. After going through that ordeal in the chair, I feel like he's more patient now. Like, he would have totally freaked out at Riley if this was 4 episodes ago.
It's also a priority thing.
Right.
Nothing that's going on in the Rush sequence of priorities is so vital that Riley is wasting anyone's valuable time.
That could be it.
And Riley isn't right in his face, so he can just ignore him.
I guess that's true, because a little bit later on, Rush is just like, I can't do anything until we're out of FTL, and I don't know when that is. And, like, Young just talks out to that answer. Yeah. He doesn't like it. Well, anyways, a lot of the ship stuff starts to die, and I just love how Rush is just like, it wasn't me.
Yep, like, I didn't do it, you can't prove I did, and...
It's such an earnest reaction from him. It's like the only time I've looked at him and thought, you're not being shady, finally.
Yeah. This one time, memories of Gloria make you less shifty. Good job.
Good job. So the next scene, I didn't remember at all, even though I've seen these a lot.
TJ talking to James?
Yeah, about how much she loved Matt. In the last, like, 14 episodes, we kept talking. We didn't know if Matt and James had a relationship, and we didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And this kind of makes Matt seem like an even bigger jerk, because if she is as far gone as to still be, like, hung up on him after all this time, and after him being a jerk to her, she's either got some psychological problems, or there was a lot more than he let on. Or he let her on.
Yeah, or she, I mean, she had let herself kind of build it up.
Right.
Beyond what it was to Matt, which just sucks. I mean, we basically discussed the last time, like, no matter what happened, the way Matt treats James is a dick move.
Still unacceptable, right? Because she's been good about it the whole time, right? She's never asked him for anything. Excuse me. She's very open and loving of Chloe. Like, you know, she tries to protect Chloe.
Yeah.
So, I don't...
And she tries to, you know, respect that Chloe is Matt's chosen whatever and let her know what's going on when he's in danger and that kind of thing.
Right, and she worries about Chloe when she's in danger and blah, blah, blah. But I feel bad for James anyways because TJ's not even there because she wants to talk to James. She's there because Young asked her to.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a terrible feeling to realize
it
that,
is.
Like, this person that you want to be talking to as a friend is, like, you know, there because it's their job right now.
Right. I mean, we've seen TJ and James together being friendly on Faith.
So it must be something about the way TJ was talking that made James go, like, oh, you're in doctor mode right now.
Right. You're not in my friend mode.
Yeah.
You're so hung up on your problems that you don't care about other people's right now. So you're in doctor mode.
It's just not... poor James. That's all.
Yeah, I agree. Well, back to Rush and Brody.
Even more stuff goes down. Yeah, clearly, like, Brody left. Maybe Brody just left to do the next thing. Maybe you're right. He wasn't done with the Kino. He was, like, done with
whatever
he was
working
doing.
On.
Went on to step two and then came back.
It was just him informing Rush that he's done with that thing that he was working on.
And making a point to Riley at the same time.
Right, like, I'm working here, dude. I do think it's interesting that here that Brody expresses that he believes in the ship, which is another probably reason why he's Rush's right-hand man, even if it's never explicitly stated.
Well, and why he eventually goes on to found the Society of Rush Worshipping.
Right. It's so weird how that fell out of nowhere, but it makes total sense if you actually pay attention to Brody. And then Rush, of course, is like, we are not fucking leaving Eli. Cut to Eeyore. I mean, Eli. complaining about how shitty things are. What I like here is that, you know, he's complaining about how lost they are. And he's wearing a shirt that says, you are here.
Yeah, the whole time. And he actually references that later when he's talking about, like, why didn't they build a fucking map into this place.
That says you are here on it? Like, but I don't think he realizes his shirt says that.
No, he points to his shirt.
Oh, does he?
He says, you are here. How hard is that?
I thought he was just pointing to himself, but I guess he knows what shirt he's wearing. He's been wearing it forever by now.
Yeah, it's literally the only shirt he owns.
All of this with Eli just shows how bad of a leader he would be.
Oh, God, yes.
And he's actually not great for morale in general.
Well, no. It's specifically, it's this thing where in a crisis situation, Eli completely breaks down.
Right.
In a situation where there's nothing on the line, or even where he believes there to be nothing on the line.
He's pretty upbeat.
He's upbeat. He's positive. He keeps people motivated. He focuses well on multiple tasks. Like,
I guess what's positive about him, it seems like he moves on pretty quickly. Like, during the crisis, yeah, he breaks down.
Yeah.
But afterwards, it's not, he doesn't dwell on it as much.
That is true.
Once the crisis is done. So that keeps, because I think the rest of the crew would be dwelling on it. And so having Eli being like, oh, everything's fine, hello, probably gets morale up. But during those crisis situations, he's awful. Like, just think about, was it Divided? When the Nakai are firing on them, and Brody is just, like, trying to get shit done, and Eli's just like, it's fucked, it's impossible!
Yeah.
And Brody's like, I don't have a degree.
Yeah, Brody's going, I know as much about this ship as I have learned in the last 3 months.
Right? Like, I was probably working on the Chevron problem, and I also had no success with it, so you're obviously smarter than me, but at least I'm, like, fucking putting my head down and working. Yeah. But anyways, I just like that Chloe is very, like, one step at a time, and Matt tries to stay positive. Matt is a very positive character in this episode.
Yeah, Matt is a much more calm, like, okay, so we can't solve, you know, exactly the problem that we're having.
Right.
We can't get back out the way we came in. We're gonna find another way. Like,
he would have been such an excellent lead for this mission.
He really would have. At the same time, he would not have been a great second under Telford.
No, he would have questioned. Well, he hated Telford anyways. It was evident from the beginning.
Yeah.
What I also think is interesting throughout this, and I know I'm belaboring this scene, but I feel like it's pretty consistent through their four scenes in the basement. I think it's interesting, his and Chloe's relationship, because I think other men would be kind of wary about ordering their girlfriends around. And he just does it. And I think that's kind of cool. And I like that Chloe has no compunction with it. She only has a compunction when, you know, he does it and it's not, like, a crisis situation.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely demonstrates something about Matt, right? Like, he has these kind of two sides. He's got the, I am a commander now.
Right.
Versus the in a relationship thing.
Right.
He's which is part of
compartmentalized.
Why, you know, James is a problem.
Right.
Poor thing, but...
But she's not... James does all right. I just... This whole episode just really hits home without really redeeming James.
Yeah, I mean...
That she's disliked on the ship.
It's more worrisome to me, like, okay, you know, she and Matt split up. He's with somebody else. It's hard to have that shoved in your face all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, that's normal human relationship stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where I feel the worst for her is that she believes her commanding officer doesn't trust her.
He doesn't.
She believes that she, like, messed up and was responsible for trapping Greer and Scott down there.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't.
Right.
Like, she needs somebody to be telling her, like, good work.
Right. She just needs a little bit of validation.
And even at the end of this episode, when she gets Greer back, like, she gets kind of a cursory glance from Young and a, like, Greer, why aren't the others with, like, with you is all Greer gets. Like, it's clear that he's waiting for Chloe and Eli and Scott back, and nothing is success until they're back.
Right.
Which, how much bullshit is that for Greer? How much bullshit is that for James?
It's bullshit for everybody. It's, God, Young makes it so hard for me to like him.
As compared to, there was a different episode where there was a situation like this.
And he was so pleased that Greer came back alive.
Right? Yeah, either Scott or Greer came back and he's like, you did what you could. Like, right. Good work. And like, why aren't you saying that to James?
Right.
Like, you got where you needed to go. You found one of the team. It's not your fault they split up.
Right. I don't know. I think he would have been difficult to be under the command of. I think even though as much as I hate Telford at least is equal in his attention to everything.
It does seem that way. Young, it seems like there might be a tiny tinge of misogyny.
I think so, too.
I mean, also evidenced by the fact that he slept with somebody under his command.
Well, he doesn't actually have that great of respect for the command structure, even though he wants people to respect him. Because he knew James and Matt were sleeping together, and he just let it happen. Because I guess boys will be boys, is what I'm thinking.
Well, and the same thing when Eli and Riley were trying to spy on the women's showers or whatever.
Yeah, he was like, boys will be boys.
Yup, you guys don't get caught doing that again.
Right? I think that's exactly... I think he's an old school bird. And some things just don't register to him. I think he sees women as probably emotional. Like, he probably does not understand why Emily is so angry with him.
Oh, he clearly doesn't.
He still doesn't. And I wonder if it's just because he doesn't really hold women in as high of esteem. But, I mean, that being said, he wanted Chloe to defend him.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
I think when it gets into an official, like... He has to look at every person who can do the job.
Mm-hmm.
He's okay at looking at those people and evaluating them. And obviously he, you know, wanted James on his team as a lieutenant.
Right.
The problem is that when it's in a situation where you're just the first person that comes to mind is who you're going to trust for XYZ thing, or it's an emotional situation like people coming home through a Stargate, he does not see women as like needing the same affirmation. I'm not sure. It's kind of a mess.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And once we get to TJ telling him she's pregnant, we might change our mind about that, but I'm not entirely sure if I will or not.
Yeah.
I'm very eager to discuss that scene with you because I'm very conflicted about it.
Yeah.
But I guess we should go back to, I think we discussed that Young is pissed off that Rush can't do anything. But instead of, like, commanding Rush, he walks away, which is pretty uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah. I mean, basically, he comes in, he listens to them talk, and then he's like, how about we put priority on rescuing the people we lost? And Rush goes, nothing I can do about that.
Right.
And Young just talks off. I think because, really, like, he has no evidence right now that Rush isn't doing everything he can.
Right.
And Rush just put his literal life and mind on the line.
Right.
And they're still only working through that. Like,
right.
There aren't easy answers here, and Young doesn't know what to do about it.
Right. I agree. But still, I just like to point out that it's uncharacteristic.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
We'll skip over them wandering through. It's not that important.
Well, to go back to Young for one second, I think that it's possible if Eli was here, he'd be writing Eli, right? Because Eli needs someone constantly there going, do this, do this, do this. It's important.
Yeah, that is very evident about Eli for sure.
But Rush doesn't. And Young finally has figured out that that's just going to piss Rush off.
Right.
And make him work less effectively and make him conceal what he's doing from Young.
Right.
So... maybe this is a tiny light of repair in their command relationship, but
that will get ruined eventually.
Oh, always.
But yeah, that's interesting.
So anyway, back underground, Eli finds a shade of hope for himself,
right?
About you know how close destiny may or may not be,
right? I really liked his delivery. David Blue's delivery is like, see how easy it is, but it's just a simple map.
Yeah.
I was like, I really love David Blue is what I think. I think Eli I'm on the fence about, but I love David Blue's acting choices.
Yeah, I mean, and there's so much good acting. Like,
right.
Every person on this crew, like on this cast, takes their character and really inhabits it.
Agreed.
In terms of, you know, their responsibilities to others. And I think that makes up for a lot more writing inconsistencies that we're not noticing because the acting is covering it.
It makes sense. I mean, so. I know in the commentary for this episode, they mentioned how Robert Carlyle really, really pays attention to everything about his character. That's, like, the writers didn't remember the glasses thing. Robert Carlyle was like, oh, my glasses. And probably the ring was one thing he would have recalled. And so yeah. A lot of those things that keep coming back over and over again, and a lot of acting choices that he made in the beginning was because he really was looking towards the future and trying to keep his character very, very consistent. Yeah. And that makes sense because his character is probably the most consistently written. And, yeah. You know, maybe Peter Calamus did similar things with Brody because Brody is the most consistently written. Riley's pretty consistent. Unfortunately, Ray is not consistent, and she's absent in this episode again.
Yeah, so it makes me think that maybe Ming-Na's contract was, like, a part-time thing.
That's so weird for the third leader, because they keep trying to set it up as, like, this triumvirate.
Yeah. But... And definitely, you know, the third, like, biggest name actor, I would think.
Yeah, she's fucking Mulan, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, she wasn't Melinda May yet, but she would be.
Right, and she's in a lot of huge movies. Like, she's pretty famous. I just want to know what she would be saying to this whole situation, and I'm betting it's, let it go, young. Like, Rush is going to do what he can, but, like, it is what it is. That's yeah, what I like, bet she would be saying.
Absolutely. When we drop out, like, have that team ready, and let's... I mean, I think Ray would have been petitioning for...
More teams.
Even more teams.
Yeah, why right? Didn't they only do two teams?
Because there were only two teams of military people, and Ray wasn't around to...
Be like, civilians can do it too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, if she was trying to protect civilians, she might have said, no way.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Like, why would we put, you know, 15 but, people's I mean, lives on the line?
You can still, you can put it up and say, you know, no one is required to do this.
Right.
But volunteer, you know, if you want to, you're increasing right. The potential of this.
I mean, because they can't have a shortage of controllers of the Stargates.
I assume not. They don't seem to.
Right. Like, that ship has to have a lot of them. And they seem to lose a lot. Well, anyways, back to TJ and Young, talking about James.
There's a really short scene of just Brody and Rush.
Oh, shit. I don't want to miss that. Yes. Okay, next
in which... And this is, I was remembering Brody's line before, but putting it two episodes early, in which basically they can see that Destiny is headed out of the galaxy.
That's my favorite part about this scene, as I was discussing a little earlier, is that they both know what each other are talking about, even though they independently came to that conclusion.
Yes.
And I love it so freaking much. And like, Brody, and when Brody says we can't lie to him, like we have to tell Young the truth, Rush actually considers it. Do you know how huge that is?
And there's this incredible, like, Brody is still looking at the map.
Right.
Only tilts his head toward Rush, says, you have to tell him. Focus shifts back to Rush. Like,
right.
It's a really, for a 60-second scene, it is incredibly beautiful and powerful and...
Those two together are fucking powerhouses. No wonder I've, like, glommed on to the two of them. They really work well with each other.
Well, and it's so vital. We talked a lot in the first couple of episodes how we had no way of knowing what was going on in Rush's head.
Right. Because, like, he had no counterpart.
He had no one there to do the TV thing where you go, I'm thinking A. Are you thinking A? Okay. Right. Like, right. And Brody became that person. And,
right.
And they're still doing it without... You know, Rush being like, I believe that we are leaving the galaxy and that will be a problem, you know.
Right, right.
It's like, here is a map, here is a picture, we're going to, you know, reference some stuff, right. And then I'm going to tell you, you have to tell Young.
Yeah.
Like.
It's like, in case you haven't been noticing.
Yeah.
These two work on the same wavelength.
And I also never noticed that my first three times through the show, which is crazy.
Well, that's because this show is literally Eli, Young, Rush, Chloe, Matt.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. TJ.
Occasionally TJ, occasionally Ray, occasionally Greer.
Yeah, and I assume they're saving up Ray because of the Mandy situation.
No, that makes sense. That's pretty common if someone's going to have a huge, huge part the next episode. And they're not like, you know, Jack Harkness.
Yeah.
So basically Rush and Young would be the Jack Harknesses. They usually will either give them a very bit part in the episode beforehand or take them out altogether.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens in TNG all the time. But still, it's weird that Ray is not a part of any of these decisions.
Yeah, which I think is part of what we sense in the overall narrative flow as, like, her not being written very strongly is that she's just not there half the time. Well, so this conversation happens between Young and TJ, where we find out basically, no, he doesn't trust James. No, he doesn't think that James thinking he doesn't trust her is a problem.
It's a huge... It's been evidence since episode one when she was like, hey, you comforted everybody else except me, and I'm one of your lieutenants. And he's just like, shut the fuck up, James. So it's just...
Well, yeah, and I'm like, I don't care if you don't trust somebody. If you don't trust somebody, and they're right there in you, like, in your core team with you...
Right.
You still sit them down and you go, I'm not trying to shut you out of this. I'm not trying to be cruel. Like, here's what we need from you, and I know that you can do it.
Right.
Even if you know that they're going to fail. Even if you know that in a different situation, you would be trying to get rid of them because you'd have someone to replace them. He and doesn't have that freaking convenience.
No, and you certainly don't send people to go spy. And because, sorry, this is actually very similar to an office environment I had been in. So someone basically got me to open up to them, and then they told my boss everything I said.
Oh, yuck.
About my frustrations. Yeah. Like, how sick is that? Like, I thought someone was just trying to be my friend and, like, help me, like, vent and figure out what I needed to do to cope better in the office environment. So it's, like, shitty that he did that, because that reminds me of my old shitty boss. And then it's shitty that he's sharing his lack of trust with TJ at all. Like, yeah. They're not together anymore. And you just don't do that.
I mean, TJ's been sitting here going to James saying, no, he trusts you. Of course he trusts you. He knows you're doing a good job. And Young's going, no, I don't.
Right. And all that does is it makes TJ not trust her.
Yeah, for TJ to continue encouraging James, which is the only thing that's been keeping James going, because Young's sure as hell not doing it.
Right? It's not going to be
sincere. She's lying to her.
Yeah. It's bad. It's bad.
It's bad. He's bad. Yeah. Everything's toilets. Anyway.
Everything's toilets. Okay. So, after we've just berated Young, we're going to have Rush take Young away before she can tell him he's pregnant. And I love how Rush, like, reminds him, like, he's like, oh, when I was left behind last time, Young is like, shut up.
Well, it's very convenient, because also that becomes important by the end of the episode, right?
Oh, no, this mirrors Matt being left behind, and it mirrors Rush being left behind.
And it's a very convenient, like, way to drop into conversation for somebody that's just picking up the show, a show which has a lot of through plot lines, to say, there was a time when Rush was left behind on a planet, like, without making that a huge part of the flashbacks and that kind of thing.
So. I personally think it was just Rush reminding people in the room.
Oh, I'm sure he was just shoving it in Young's face.
Oh, and I also, thought it was more, like, calculated than that. Like, yes, I did see him shoving it in Young's face, but I thought it was more like a, in case you guys aren't trusting me about not saving Eli at the moment, like, remember, Young fucking left me on a planet.
That's true, too.
So I thought that was just what he was doing.
Well, and, yeah, to remember that he saved himself and he saved Chloe.
Right. And then, importantly, he tells Young the truth here, which he never would have done in the last 13 episodes.
That's true.
So I think that was kind of like his, like, remember how we have issues because we don't communicate? Anyways, I'm communicating to you right now. They're dead unless we can get them on this last drop out of FDL.
Yeah.
So back on the planet, I like that Matt is chalking arrows, like, good for him for thinking ahead. Eli makes his speech about the You Are Here maps, which makes me happy.
Yep.
And I like Greer's excitement over the maps, even though that kind of gets him screwed over, but not screwed over.
Yeah, it's so, like, I'm glad that they let it be Chloe that figured out the maps. That she'd been like, you know, she wasn't saying anything. Nobody told her, study the walls and see if there's markings. Like, she did that on her own.
These are likely Nakai ruins, so it might have been helpful that she has that Nakai knowledge that's starting to manifest in her.
Yeah, that is what I'm wondering.
I mean, it's either that or the Ursi, but I'm betting it's the Nakai.
Well, it could be some other race we don't know about, too.
That's true.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it doesn't, stylistically, it doesn't look like anything modern Nakai that we've seen, but...
Right.
You're absolutely right. It is underground, and it could be anything.
Anyways. So, yay, Chloe, for being useful. You'll be more useful next series.
Yep, and then Greer runs off, and a collapse happens, and...
Then we're back to TJ and Park.
Yeah, it does seem weird to me that, like... They know exactly where he was. They know how far he was from them.
Right.
And they don't wait to find his body before deciding he's dead.
But no, the issue was is that they were trying to get the rocks off, but it was encouraging more of a cave-in. So when he wasn't responding to his radio and when they tried digging him out and then the ceiling was starting to crumble more, that's when they had to make the decision to leave him behind.
Oh, okay. 'Cause to me it looked like, oh, like 20 rocks fell on him, and we yelled a lot, and we moved some rocks, and then we gave up.
No, I think it was a much bigger...
It was a bigger cave-in than it appeared.
I mean, I think the distance is a little bit weird as well. I really think that somehow that got foreshortened, because I imagine there's a lot more in between them and Greer than what it felt like from the camera angle.
Okay.
Because, yeah, you're right. It only looked like a foot fell in.
Well, and, like, he was maybe 5 feet from them, like...
Right, like...
You can know, like, if I can get my... If I can walk 3 feet and then get my arm as deep in the rocks as it goes, I should be able to feel his body, like...
Right. But I think it was still, like, the worry about the cave-in and that he wasn't responding.
Yeah.
So, anyways, TJ and Park, which is weird to me... It's so weird to me. Like, wasn't TJ just getting pissed at Park 3 episodes ago for being on the wrong side of the coup? Like, threatening her?
Yeah, but as we've just been discussing, like, Team Girl Squad.
Oh, that they're just there for each other? Cause...
Also, I think Park was on the planet.
And oh, so that's right.
I assume there was some reconciliation that happened there.
We just didn't see it because it was mostly TJ and Chloe chatting about being pregnant.
But, I mean, Park makes good points.
Well, I mean, she does. Park always makes good points, but we never see TJ and Park talk again.
No, until it's really just Park being like, you have to tell him.
It's weird. It's so weird. I think it's because it would normally be with either Ray or with Chloe or with James, and she's been robbed of all three of those characters, so then it falls to Park. And I feel like when did Park become good enough friends with TJ, I guess, on the planet, to be talking about this with her?
Yeah.
Because TJ is very closed off about herself.
Well, on the planet or in all the times when it's all the girls running the infirmary.
I guess so. That must be it. It would have been nice to actually have seen that bond happen. As opposed to just like, oh, here it is, and then we'll never mention it again.
Talk about a conversation between two women, one even of a minority, and it doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
I thought about that.
Because it's really just about Young.
It's all about Young. That's what this show should be called. All about Young.
Yep.
So, they drop out of FDL. TJ wants to talk, but Young has to talk to Volker. James and Rush go, and Young has no confidence in them, so that sucks.
Yeah.
And then we go to Greer having his flashback. And I was thinking about how last episode you were talking about how this isn't really character growth for him, but it's more just like more exploration of his character. And I thought about it, and I think Greer's character growth has already happened. Like, to get where he is now is the best he is.
And, well, and also, we've gotten very few of this kind of direct flashback situations.
Very, very few, that's true.
Like, yes, in theory, we've just had a lot of that for Rush, but we also know that he was modifying that.
Right. And we also know the one time Eli flashback, it was a dream, so that could have been modified as well.
Yeah, and it, I mean, it meant very little. It was not, that was like his mom waking him up and telling him to get a damn job. Right, right. You know.
He's having very vivid flashbacks, so vivid that he begins to talk to them. So he obviously suffers from PTSD, just like his dad does.
Yeah.
Only he suffers from it because of his dad.
Well, or he has a concussion from being hit in the head by rocks.
I don't remember ever talking to my dad when I had...
Well, I understand. I mean, he's also military. This may not be his first concussion. The more like jelly your brain becomes, the more messed up it becomes.
That's true. But I do think that, I mean, I know we've discussed it in previous episodes. I think how his dad was in his life really does affect a lot of what he does. So he...
Oh, absolutely.
And I mean, I think he already was a no man left behind kind of person. But like he couldn't even leave his asshole dad behind in a fire. And even when his dad was dying and he hated his dad, he still couldn't leave him behind. So I feel like that has a lot of...
He has a very strong moral fiber.
Right.
Which, like, is very evident in his character. And I don't know, like, as useful as these things are, and as cool as these flashbacks are, I don't know that they were actually that necessary. Like, we knew that Grid had a terrible... past because he had thrown some stuff in Rush's face way back on the desert planet in water, right?
Right.
Or in light, I forget.
It was in light.
And
no, like, it was in air. It was on air.
And he made it obvious that he didn't like going into enclosed spaces.
Right.
With his like kind of reaction, non-reaction of like, I'll stay out here.
Right.
And not thinking it was funny at all when Eli teased him about being scared.
Right. And there's been more hints to it as well. I mean, I guess you're right. We didn't really need it, but I kind of appreciated it because it made him a lot more human to me than that stoic character he was before. And also it means a whole lot for the Tick episode in two episodes, right?
Well, that's true.
So without this, I feel like that episode would have fallen very, very flat.
That's true. Okay, maybe you're right. I just, it's an odd shift for them to go from, oh, well, it's not really fun for people to go back to Earth anymore.
Right.
With the communication stones, and that has all these weird consent issues.
Right.
Even though we're planning to use that gimmick for,
I think you're right. Structurally, it's peculiar. They had maybe that this episode was supposed to be more merged in with human, so it would have made more sense because you would have had Rush having his flashbacks while Greer's having his flashbacks, and then somebody else would have had their flashbacks. And then I think you would have felt that it fit in.
Yeah.
But because he's the only one having flashbacks right now, and he's only part of the B plot or the A plot.
Well, I'm not really sure which one is
the A plot. You're right, you're right. But that's still only half the plot of the show, of the episode. It must feel a little bit weird. Because his memories become a C-plot.
It is good that, I guess it's a good standard to set up that, like, people only get weird flashbacks when stuff is happening to their brains.
Right.
Because
Matt had his flashbacks.
I guess that's true. No, when people get knocked unconscious, we get flashbacks.
I mean, and a lot of this is to do, like, this is the reverse of Air Part 3, right? So Greer refuses to leave Matt behind in... During that time, Matt's having his flashbacks.
Yeah.
And this time, Matt has to leave Greer behind, which is such a reversal, right?
Yeah.
And you know that it bothers Greer emotionally, not rationally. Emotionally, it does, because later on, his dream dad is telling him how he's been abandoned. And you can tell, like, he's thinking about, I never left Matt behind, ever.
Yeah. I would have died on that freaking desert planet, and here they were. With trees and everything.
Right.
And they left me.
And what's even cooler, if you think about this as like a triangle between Matt, Greer, and Rush. Unlike when Young left Rush behind and no one believed him when he's like, there's nothing I could do. No one questions Greer when he said, like, honestly, like, he did what he could. Like, I would have left me behind too. Whereas when people heard Rush,
even though, yeah, I don't know. We know who Greer is, and we know he wouldn't have.
Right. That's true.
Like, he can say it all he wants, and he's saying the right thing, you're right, rationally. Because he knows rationally.
Right.
Scott had to protect the kids, and
but he's clearly has emotional problems that he has to deal with it a lot. Like, because he has gotten angry with people for reasons he should have just stayed it cool, like Matt does, you know?
Yeah.
So he doesn't have a control over his emotional stuff, which is probably why he's so stoic all the damn time.
Yeah. Because if he just is like, nope, to shutting all of that off.
Right.
Then he doesn't ever react, you know.
But I just think it's so interesting that the three left behind arcs really bleed into each other in this nice kind of cool amalgam.
Yeah.
I might write an essay about that.
It is very interesting. So three people who weren't injured couldn't unbury Greer.
Nope.
But Greer trapped under the rocks can get out.
Yeah, I don't get that either.
It's almost like it wasn't Matt's priority because Chloe was there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair to suppose, but I'm going to try.
I mean, no, I really want to believe in Matt. I want to feel like it's fair.
I mean, his voice is, like, taut and emotional when he's screaming for Greer, though. It's,
yeah.
And he, like, has them leave so he can say goodbye to Greer. Because I do think he thinks he's dead. I mean, this whole episode is about 50-50, right? And there was a 50-50 shot, Greer was dead.
It's true.
And so he had to make the decision that Greer was dead, or they were going to be screwed.
And they're on this time crunch because they know that the more the planets they hit,
right,
the better chance they have.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't know. Like, you're basically saying, I can't find them, I can't confirm they're dead. We have to move on.
Right.
And it seems like maybe he made that decision a little quickly. I only think that because I know in retrospect, if they had been at the gate 3 hours later,
right,
people would have showed up. Like, it would have been fine.
I mean, it's almost Eli's distrust in the ship that causes them those problems, because I feel like he should have supposed that they were going to try and trace it back to that gate.
Well, yeah, and instead, Eli assumes he's the only one smart enough to have figured this gate path thing out.
Yeah, that's a good point. God damn it, Eli.
And that they need to go running off and around and whatever.
Man. Anyways, do you want to just talk about Greer's past as a whole so we don't have to do it every scene that he flashes back?
Yeah.
His dad must be Desert Storm.
That seems about the right age.
Anyways, yeah, so dad was Desert Storm, used to be a good guy, obviously suffers from PTSD.
Is a real shit to his son and wife, and his wife stays with him.
Which is not a good decision on her part.
Yeah, and we know that Greer tried to tell her that.
Right.
I mean, depending on exactly how old Greer is.
I say he was 12 or 13 in that scene.
Like, well, and how old he is now, like... It's not an easy thing to do. It's not as easy as we would like to think it is.
No, I don't think it is either, but it would have been nice if his mom realized how shitty that situation was.
Yeah.
Because I think she just reinforced that leave no man behind stuff.
Yeah. He's our responsibility.
Right, don't leave him behind.
You know, even though he's destroying himself and us in the process.
Yeah, I mean, because it's so telling that like, Greer even joins the military, even though he knows that's what fucked his dad up.
Yeah. I mean, there's also... So there's a scene of his dad basically driving him down into, like, the tenderloin of the city and being like, out you go.
Right.
Which, like, we don't really know what that was for. Was that a punishment? Come back for him?
No, because he was walking home. And then the house was on fire. So either the dad intended on killing both of them.
Oh.
With Greer gone. Or he was punishing him and it was an accident. But my thoughts were, is he purposely drove his son out there.
Wow.
And then tried to kill
him. Went home, you know,
and got lit a fire.
Him and his wife drunk so they wouldn't wake up.
Mm-hmm.
That,
I mean, they don't confirm that, but that seems to be the most likely scenario to me.
And Greer really had that chance to just leave his dad there and no one would have blamed him.
Yeah.
And he fucking doesn't. And I wonder if he even, if the thought ever occurred to him that his dad might have let that fire on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, it's never addressed.
Right.
Wow.
No, it's fucked up. Like, I mean, you can almost forgive...
What a fucking mess.
You can almost forgive Greer all of his hardness and his intolerance of civilians.
Yeah, because he was a freaking civilian and there was nobody there holding his hand.
Yeah.
You know? There weren't authority figures around being nice and telling him everything was okay.
In fact, I think the military gave him that protection he kind of wanted.
Yeah.
So... I mean, wow. Those are my thoughts on Greer, except what kind of scholarship was he trying to get? He said I wasn't fast enough, so I'm assuming it was a football scholarship.
Yeah, I'm assuming football or track or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, we know he's fast because he, like, ran back and got Matt. Like,
yeah,
he
to get Matt. And Eileen, because we're getting that flashback where he's saying he wasn't fast enough for a scholarship in the same episode as we see him sprint the length of a planet.
Right. It's really heartbreaking.
Well, and it's, like I said, it's such a betrayal of your normal Stargate expectancy.
Right.
Because you're like, oh, he's running, he's gonna catch them, or he's gonna, like, see the gate closing, and it's gonna be heartbreaking. But no, like, he just gets there, and, like, they've been gone for who knows how long.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah.
No, it's just, I really love this show. it hurts.
It's real good.
So anyways, I guess that's Greer's flashback. I did want to talk about him lifting the bricks. He was, like, piling the bricks, and then the dad just knocks them down.
Yeah.
That is a fucked up dad. That is a dad that I'll say it, deserves to die in that fire if he's not going to get help.
Yeah. Well, and we don't know. We don't know if he is trying to go to counseling, and...
We don't. You're right.
Maybe that's why the mom, you know, believes, is because once a month... You know, she's talking to his VA shrink, and they're saying, well, he's getting better.
Well, we know
and
how
maybe
messed
he
up
was
the VA
way
is.
Worse when Greer was 5 and 6 and doesn't remember.
Right. I don't know. It's just messed up to
it
like,
is.
Have
I mean,
your
yeah,
kids
the
do
like,
that and then knock it over.
You know, maybe. Stand out here in the sun with me. Build this thing.
Well, I watch you.
No, you didn't do it right.
Well, he didn't even say you didn't do it right. He's just like,
yeah.
Knock it over. Do
fuck
it again.
This thing in for particular.
It's like he was trying to teach his kid futility.
Yeah.
Like, I think he got pleasure from doing it, from fucking with someone else's life, but I also think there was some sort of fatherly aspect of him thinking, this is how they learn. This
yeah.
is how I should have learned. And who knows, his dad might have been a dick to him too.
Oh, I'm sure.
But it's evident to me that PTSD is very, very, very influential on how he reacts.
Yeah.
To his son and his wife. Ugh. Because whatever he experienced, they never did, and I think he's bitter about that.
Yeah. Well, and...
But he doesn't want them to know because he yells at Greer for looking at that photo.
Yeah. Well, no, and I think a part of it is, you know, like, he went over there, he experienced whatever he experienced, and then, like, there's no reward for that, right?
Right.
You come back to the same life, the same family,
yeah.
same problems that you had. Nothing's changed.
Except now
your brain is a mess.
Yeah.
In addition to all of that.
Makes sense. But, I mean, like, if you think the VA is bad now, it was awful in the 90s. They didn't even think that PTSD was a problem.
Oh, yeah.
So, and they're barely starting to understand that it's a problem now. So, I mean, it all makes sense. He's probably dishonorably discharged, too, if you think about it. Because he wasn't enlisted. Sorry, he wasn't enlisted, but he wasn't drafted. So.
Yeah, well, and.
And he probably wasn't.
I don't know, given, assuming that he had any of the sort of same anger or behavior issues that Greer has exhibited, like. Maybe, you know, he got on somebody's bad side the same way Greer did.
Right. And it could have been because his own dad was abusive. Like, that stuff really, you do carry the psychological scars of even as far back as your great-great-grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Well, and it's, I mean, that next generation back, you're looking at even parents who were trying to be good parents were being told, like, don't hug your children, it's bad for them.
Right.
And that, you know, there's a whole generation of people who did not get a lot of affection from their parents because those people thought they were being good and making strong young men.
Right. And then also that was before the civil rights movement and whenever his dad grew up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a whole host of things that I think lead to Greer's anger. I mean, it's all very understandable.
Yeah, it's just, it's a lot of depth to be exploring in this episode that's, you know, about so many other things as well.
No, that's true. So, I mean, yeah, it's weird that it's inserted in here, but I appreciate it that it's there somewhere. Yeah,
and it is, like you said, like it gives these people who are left behind with only themselves.
Right.
Because everyone on this mission in one way or another chose to be here and chose to be in a job that was literally all-consuming of your life.
Right. Well, not everybody was supposed to go to Destiny, though. Like, I'm betting James wasn't supposed to go to Destiny.
Yeah, well, and James is one of the ones who's not dealing with it well, right?
That's true.
James is one of the ones who really, like, people like Rush and Greer don't exhibit any desire to be doing anything other than their job. And a lot of times that means, like, you don't really necessarily want to spend a lot of time alone with your thoughts because you've got a lot going on that you don't want to think about.
No, that makes sense.
Let Destiny physically erase from your mind, like Rush tried to do.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, Matt had something he didn't want to focus on or think about. Greer did. Young wanted to go back and focus on his personal life, so he wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Telford doesn't have anything.
Yeah, Telford clearly has nothing.
And
I'm sure there's something going on in the background of Telford, too.
Right. Well, I'm very curious about his personal life and how the Lucian, supposing he was brainwashed, how the Lucian Alliance,
you know, targeted him or how it messed with his personal life.
But yeah, we can talk about that with Incursion. And then Brody probably has some sort of dark past as well, because he's pretty consumed.
Well, and Brody, I mean, Brody is the man who said that he always knew he would die in space.
Right, so he has no problems.
Like, yeah, he found out there was a Stargate, he did everything he could to keep working on it, and right, he walked through it.
Right, and then I don't know if Volker was supposed to be on the team or not. I don't know if Lisa was supposed to be, I mean, Park.
Yeah.
If she was supposed to be, but she's probably the most well-adjusted to it.
Yeah, she's dealing pretty well with being on Destiny, and it doesn't seem to be, like, changing her or harming her in the way it is some of the other non-military personnel.
So, I wonder if it was either a happy accident that she ended up on the ship, or she was supposed to be on it.
Yeah.
And so she had already psychologically prepared herself for this.
So. Yeah.
Anyways, because Ray certainly is not dealing with it great.
Yeah.
Young goes back to talk to TJ. I thought Young knew she was pregnant for some reason. I thought he was told on faith, but I guess not.
Well, we thought that he might have been, because he got down to the planet and, like, was looking at everybody.
Right.
But I think it's one of those things where Young, you know, willingly chooses not to hear a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even here, I mean, his reaction is okay, right? Like, it's hard to hear on a ship that you could all possibly die on any time that the woman that you tried to leave for your wife is pregnant with your kid. That is a difficult thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But think how difficult it is for TJ, who actually, for some reason, because the mothers always have to deal with the consequences of it more so than men do. It's even worse for TJ. And, yeah. So, like, I don't think his reaction was overly negative. Obviously, he's quiet, and then he kisses her hands and is like, we'll make it work. And when she tells him what her decision is, he's like, I never said we should get rid of it. So those are all positive. But for some reason, the scene just doesn't sit right with me.
It's his automatic assumption that he will be involved.
Yeah.
That they will be together in order to raise this child. And that, like, because how bad does that feel for her? Like, she ended it. He said he was going back to his wife. And then she has made this decision on her own.
Right.
To keep this kid on Earth, on Destiny, either way.
Right.
And that he just goes, okay, that, like, now you're, like, you're mine again, and...
You know what? That's
why the hand kissing bothers me so much. You're right.
Because right he immediately goes, you know, not just, you know, I'll help, I'll do whatever I can. What do you need?
He does a very intimate
He goes, thing. Okay, clearly that means our entire relationship is back to where it was.
And it's
even
not.
Though we both walked away.
Yeah.
And I'm involved, you know, as a father and as your partner.
Like, he can be involved in the kid's life. That's fine.
Like,
but
it's,
not...
on the one hand, it is, you know, a great thing.
Right.
If that's what she wanted, but he doesn't bother asking.
Well, yeah. But also, he should, I don't know, I think that he should be included in on the kid. But to assume that it's going to be them together again, which is what it felt like.
Well,
like,
yeah. And to put it on her.
Right.
To then, after having told him this incredibly difficult thing.
Have to break up with him again.
To say, and I don't actually want to be with you. If you want to help with the kid, that's fine. But I need our relationship to stay professional.
Right.
Like,
he's putting all the difficult... I think he's been consistently putting all the difficult emotional decisions on her.
Oh, of course.
Because she's the one that had to leave.
Yeah, she's the one that had to choose to resign from her job.
Right.
She's the one that had to find out, like...
She didn't want him a part of it at all. She tried to stay on the planet away from him.
Yeah.
And he's just all like, okay, baby.
Yep. And it actually, it makes me feel even worse about Descendants then, because...
Right. Yeah, let's not talk about Descendants until Descendants happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. Like, how did that... Whatever. It's different writers.
He's,
that's what we'll say.
Being a madly man.
Anyways.
So, Chloe and Eli and Matt go through to their first planet.
Monster.
At some point before Greer gets there, Eli dials another gate. I was hoping also that they would be dialing back to, like, back to where Greer was, right? You expect, oh, they went through and we were all disappointed, but now they're just going to go back and find him, and nope, they don't.
Nope. Well, they do eventually, but it's too late at that point, don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they go around a different way. It's all, I mean, I don't blame them for their decisions. It's all 50-50. Like, that's consistent with them. 50-50, 50-50, we don't know. Like, it's possible that we could be just one planet away from what's in range of Destiny, and if we had just stayed on the other one, Destiny would have dropped out, and we would have seen it. Like, all these possibilities.
Yeah.
But they keep moving until they get to the Nakai ship.
Yeah, well, so they get far enough in that they realize that they're going the wrong way.
Right.
But then Eli goes, there was some kind of map on that other ship.
He doesn't know that.
Yeah, no, he does.
He just thinks that there is.
Well, because apparently Rush said that he found something on that ship before the aliens caught him.
Right.
So then Eli pushes them to go all the way back. And then they turn around and, like, run their asses as fast as they can.
Well, it would have worked had Rush not been so dedicated to trying to find him until the last minute, right? If Rush hadn't dialed the gate at the last minute because he was so desperate to find Eli,
yeah,
he would have made it. And that's heartbreaking in itself, especially since Eli will never realize that Rush really does care about him.
Yeah. It's another one of those things, right? Like, because it happened in this way where it wasn't communicated, like a lot of the things that happened in time.
Right.
We just don't know. James has some moments during the search that she tries to communicate very directly with Rush, like the same way Matt would or Young would. You know, like, okay, so how are we splitting up these teams? Okay, so who's going which way?
Right.
And Rush just sort of, like, not brushes her off, but obviously doesn't want to communicate with her, doesn't consider her really...
Yeah, poor James.
...authoritative, which kind of stinks.
Yeah, I don't know if he, in this case, he really was brushing James off, or is he... I think he was already where she was, and so he's just moving on, right?
Like, he's just like, I don't have time to acknowledge you figuring out the obvious answer.
Right, which, I mean, that's the shitty thing about him. Is he does that a lot. And it sucks that he did it to James, who is very sensitive to that, but I think he would have done that to pretty much everyone. But the good thing about that, about James, though, is that she said it before he did, though. So usually it's like, he has to be like, hey, Matt, maybe we should think about this thing because you're so hard-headed and stubborn.
Yeah. Okay, that's true.
So
maybe it's more positive than I thought.
I'm going to make it positive because, goddammit, James, I love you.
I will go back to the Greer flashbacks for one more moment, which is, I wonder if they filmed this, all of this, mm-hmm. before the rest of the show. Because it's obviously the same actor with lots of hair.
I think they filmed some of this out of order because they knew it was going to be on different episodes. Like, knew that the scenes, like on the Nakai planet, they knew that it was going to be in a couple episodes later.
Yeah. And
so I think they did kind of film some of the stuff out of order.
Well, so, I mean, because if they had filmed even parts of Greer's flashbacks in childhood before Greer on the ship, right. like, that lets the actor know and the writers know, like, that all of that is there and coming.
Right.
And that does help explain, like, some of Greer's reactions to things. And
oh, I see what you're saying. Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. I hope that... I don't think they usually know totally what's going to happen, but I think it makes better choices when they kind of let people know. But on the other hand, if you do that, then it might color their reactions in different ways. Maybe you want them to be completely ignorant.
Yeah.
Of what they will become.
Yeah, well, but yeah,
I don't think it's bad to let them know about past stuff. And if it's a huge decision that they're going to make that changes their character, you should always let the character know that. Like,
yeah.
I will always be pissed off about what they did to Julian Bashir in DS9. Basically, he was genetically enhanced the whole time. And it would have been nice if he had known that, because he could have made hints to that.
Yeah. But
they added it in randomly. And then also, they replaced him with a shapeshifter for, like, I think it was, like, 5 episodes. But he was never told that he was a shapeshifter in those episodes.
Oh, wow.
So he's like, I could have done so many things if I had just known that.
Oh, like, that's some Star Trek bullshit. Yep.
I know. Like, I'm so sorry, Alexander Siddig. Like, you really are a great actor. You would have pulled it off without making it obvious. But whatever.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I think it would be good if they don't do it that they do.
Yeah.
What's next?
What is coming up next? Some things. I mean, there's all of them hopping through all their different planets.
Right.
They lose a Kino at one point.
I like the comments about Vermont when Chloe's like, oh, this looks like Vermont. And Eli's like, oh, how amazing. That a planet on the other side of the universe looks like fucking Vermont.
Yeah. And I don't know what the point of him being negative is.
It's just, no, because this is how Eli always is when it's a really huge problem. Like, this is pretty consistent for him. But I mean, he perks up when he goes back to the ship, right? So when he gets them to go, even though Chloe really doesn't want to, because she's suffering from her own PTSD issues.
Yeah.
He's a lot more enthusiastic. Once he figures out how to solve the problem, he's negative while he's working on it. Because I think he's so used to knowing what the answer is that it pisses him off when he just doesn't know it immediately. If you can't think of it immediately, there must not be an answer.
Well, and that's, God, it's so much to do with his age, and because I know people who hit that wall in high school or in college of, like, they were smart enough that everything had always been easy.
Right, and then they didn't realize that everyone else has to work hard. At some point, they also have to work hard, right?
Yeah.
I was one of those.
And I think that,
were one of those, too.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely was. You know, Eli's just finally hitting this, like, you know, not everything is easy. Not everything's a video game with a path laid out in front of you.
Right. He's just not matured yet.
Yeah. He will. He'll get there.
Well, anyways.
Definitely would be there now, 5 years later.
So
they do go all the way back to the Nakai ship. They find Rush's glasses. They find some cool stuff.
Chloe reveals that she can read Nakai.
Yeah, like, not that she can really read it, but she looks at it and knows what it means.
Right, which is really cool. It's one of my favorite things about her and her gift. And I did put it in a fanfic where it's like, she kind of hates that she doesn't understand the whys of why she knows what she knows.
Yeah.
So she's having to learn the basics that get her where she is, and I think she finds that very frustrating.
Yeah.
Because she has all this knowledge that she doesn't really know what it means or why it is. And it's helpful on occasion, but other occasions, like, think how helpful it would be if she actually knew what it was for in combination with other stuff.
I take it back. Young does look James in the eye and say, nice work, Lieutenant.
Oh.
And she says, thank you. Any word from Rush? And he immediately walks away from her and goes to Greer.
Yeah, I just thought he was pretty cold to James and Greer in this scene.
Well, yeah, he's very cold to both of them, but he does at least go through the words and say the frickin' motion.
Yeah,
the...
but James doesn't believe him. You can tell.
Well, yeah. And to Greer, he doesn't say anything that we see, right?
Right.
Like, Greer goes, they wouldn't have left me if they hadn't thought I was dead.
Which I think also triggers something in Young, but...
Yeah, like, which, I mean, he's looking at Greer and going, you shouldn't have left them, is what I'm seeing in his eyes. And I'm like, in this one case, it's not Greer's fault, fuckwit. Like...
Well, I mean, it also goes to show that he, even though he loves Greer, as we've seen before, Matt is his favorite.
Oh, yeah, Matt is absolutely his favorite. Matt and Eli.
Right. And he lost both. Oh, and Chloe is also one of his favorites.
Yep.
So he lost all three of his favorites.
Yep. He sent the kids on a mission that should have been safe and entertained them right. and let them explore a planet. And instead, like, they all got dead.
Yeah. And he's taking it out on Greer because he feels like Greer should have stopped it.
Yeah.
And to be fair, Greer did try to stop it. But whatever. All I had in my notes was Greer has a weird expression when he's looking at Young.
Yeah.
Like, maybe he's starting to reevaluate how Young came back through the gate and evaluating it against his own reaction as he came through the gate.
Yeah.
And realizing something was off there. That could be one thing.
Well, that's true.
But he would never defend Rush because he's going to try and kill Rush in a couple episodes.
Well, but I don't think he would have left anybody behind still.
That's true.
Right? That's like, true. Young went down to that planet and allowed those people to stay in faith. Mm-hmm. Young came back from that planet and left Rush behind.
Yeah.
Like,
Greer realizing that he's not the same as Young is at all.
Yeah, if Young is looking at Greer going like, why did you leave them? Ba-da-da-da.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, like, anyway.
But they don't really continue on that thought anyways, so.
Nope, they just let it go. Rush... comes back.
He's very upset. He goes straight to the...
And because the gate is still open, the kids on the planet can't dial in.
Yeah. But in Rush's favor, he's very upset. Like, when he doesn't talk to anyone is when he's at his most upset.
Oh, yeah.
Because he just goes straight to the computer and looks at the clock, and he just stares at the
utility. Nothing he can say.
Yeah.
Do we think that he has the code already? And could be controlling all of this?
No, because that's why he had to bring Mandy on board.
Oh, right.
I think he has no idea what to do with this code. The only other thing I wanted to mention before we go to final thoughts is the Nakai ship seems to have a map of where Destiny was going. So, obviously, true to what we have been saying, they've been tracking them for a very long time.
Yeah, either it has a map of where Destiny's going, or it has a map of... gate address planets.
Mm-hmm.
And has a suspected trajectory. Yeah, it seems weird that the Nakai would use these ancient, like, gate address system, but...
Well, they probably figured out that the ship goes to gates. So they probably found the gates. But how could they get to those gates faster than Destiny does?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is weird. Huh.
I
just assume it's, like... I think it's,
or,
like,
or is Eli just recognizing galactic coordinates at this point? And
it could be that. Know. And I also wonder if maybe the Nakai had, like, a suspected trajectory with, like, I'm sure they've done, like, research on planets out there, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
So I'm sure they were like, okay, this is what we think. We think a Stargate would go on this because when we looked at it, it blinked in these kind of ways. So we know that it has this kind of atmosphere, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what it was. But how would... Yeah, if they're following that ship, how would they know what was ahead of the ship? Unless they've been following the seed ships as well.
Yeah. I mean, and what is their relationship to Destiny and to the Ancients and to the seed ships that seems to be, like, what a huge portion of their race is primarily concerned with?
Well, only the portion that we see. Oh my god, what if they're led by, like, a Prince Zuko character?
Yeah, there's some crazy branch of the Nakai that's just on this crusade for this ship.
And the rest of the Nakai don't give a shit?
Yeah, the rest of the Nakai are like, you know, that's the lost tribe that took off with, like, 20 spaceships a million years ago, and we don't even You know, they're the lost city of Atlantis for the Nakai.
Oh my gosh, this is upsetting. I thought I was going to compliment them on being consistent, and then I'm like, wait, but how?
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I guess it ends with Riley continuing Eli's work and Greer just sitting on his bed and feeling fucking sad. And it's almost like he feels like he abandoned them.
Yep.
Which is so not what happened, baby. But that's his personality. Of course he thinks he's the one.
Well, and Young treated him that way.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he did exactly what he should have done. He got to the gate and he waited because he knew that that was a contact point.
That, I mean, yeah, I even learned that from my dad, right? Like, always go to the place you saw someone last. The most sure way to find someone is to go to the place you saw them last.
Because they're going to come back at some point.
Right.
Or you go to a place that they have to go if they go back that way.
Right.
Like, anyway.
Anyways. Eli's just a bad leader.
Yeah, I mean...
Well...
It's a really good episode.
It is a good episode. My final thoughts are definitely that this is a very, very good episode. It's tense. You don't know what's going to happen next. And oh my God, they don't solve the crisis for the second episode in a row.
Yeah, for a second episode in a row, they have not solved the whole crisis. And so many of the ways in which we would expect Stargate to solve its issues have just been totally...
It's so subversive.
...shot. Yeah.
And it goes into my theory of how the ship is an antagonist for the first series.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, like, I had this friend who complained to me. He said, I didn't like Stargate Universe because he felt like this ship just solved all the problems. Like, every problem that happens is because the ship doesn't help them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it took them to this one planet, but it didn't tell them where to get shit. And then it tries to, like, gate away before they're even done. Like, if someone was in control of the ship, they would just stay there and get the water back and get Matt out of the crevice, you know? But the ship's an antagonist.
Yeah, the ship causes as many problems as it...
Solves.
Solves. At least for the beginning.
And, like, half the problems it's solving, it caused itself anyways. Like, it has no air filter. Right? That's the ship's problem. That becomes their problem. Right?
Like, well, and it's...
It doesn't have enough shields. That's the ship's problem. That becomes their problem, you know?
And would they even have known, you know, like, assuming this mission had gone through the way it should have gone through.
Right.
Would stuff like air filters have been something that they even brought with them?
I don't know.
You know, they still would have gotten onto the ship maybe a week later. Maybe it would have already flown through a sun and it would have had a little more power for their first run.
Right.
But...
In the long run, the ship was going to be the antagonist no matter what, even if they were prepared.
Yeah. I mean, it's a million-year-old spaceship with technology they don't understand that they've never seen before.
Right.
That about covers it. Like, so much deep stuff going on while completely subverting what a Stargate is. Which is why Stargate fans hate it.
And why we love it so much.
Yeah, so good.
Well, so where can they find us?
We are at sgupodcast.tumblr.com.
Yep. So we'll catch you guys there.
Yeah. Check in with us. Bye, Internet.